believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight took a 5-minute private airplane lesson in 1966, and the next day she bought the plane. She's been the California State Assembly Minority Leader, our Ambassador to the Bahamas, the U.S. Customs Service Commissioner, and the President and CEO of the Air Transport Association. Today she serves as the counselor to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the world's largest business federation representing 3 million businesses. Her name, the Honorable Carol Hallett. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760, WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now here's Jack.
We're with the counselor to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the Honorable Carol Hallett. Carol, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Well, thank you so much, Jack, and it's a real privilege to be on your program.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Certainly. My childhood was a wonderful childhood, and it was somewhat unique because my mother died at childbirth, and my father was left with this little baby, and friends when I was about a year old, introduced my father to a widow who also had a little baby just about my age, and they fell in love and were married when my sister and I were both around 2 years old, and in fact, we were just 4.5 months apart. And we grew up as a very close and a very loving family, and I was most fortunate to have such a wonderful mother and father throughout my lifetime.
What were the biggest things they taught you, Carol?
One of the differences between so many families today and then is we did everything as a family. We had dinner together. They taught us values. They taught us the importance of being honest and being loyal. And there were so many different things that I compare then and today to. And I think the work ethic that they instilled in my sister and me was absolutely essential to the things that I did later in life.
You grew up in Carmel, California, right by Pebble Beach.
That is right. I actually grew up in Carmel Highlands and went to a one-room school, Bay School. That was up until the eighth grade, and then everyone in the eighth grade went to Carmel High School. And one of the things that was kind of unique is there was no school bus to the high school from Carmel Highlands. And at that time, you could get a driver's license at 14 if you had no way to get to school. And so that's what I did. I got my driver's license at 14 and started driving my sister and me to school. And that was kind of a big deal that you wouldn't see happening today. But we were country kids and had a wonderful life growing up in Carmel.
I think the three most famous people from Carmel are Clint Eastwood, Doris Day, and the Honorable Carol Hallett.
Thank you. Well, I think Bing Crosby is one of them, okay, too, and he probably is a little bit more well-known than me.
How did you ever get into politics?
I was always interested in politics. My mother was active in Republican Women, and I just thought it was interesting, and I will never forget not actually knowing much about the candidates, but I remember going out and for a number of different candidates, getting petitions signed for them when they were trying to run for office. And I always had the bug in me. And I was then, of course, this is right after getting out of college and being a young married gal, and my husband and I moved to San Luis Obispo, California, where he was becoming a teacher. And lo and behold, I heard about a campaign that was underway for the state assembly and for another candidate running for the state senate. So I did volunteer work for them. They were both elected, and afterwards I proposed that they open a joint office and let me run it. And I had already learned how to fly airplanes, and one of the two gentlemen who was the assemblyman, he too was a pilot. And so he said, well, if you can fly a plane, you can do the job. And so that is how I first got into politics, was running a political office for two members of the California State Legislature.
You served three terms in the California State Assembly. From 72 to 82, you were the Assembly Minority Leader. What do you do as the Minority Leader?
Well, the minority leader means that you were the party that did not have the majority control, but nonetheless, I was in charge of the Republican caucus and organizing the Republicans, not only on legislative battles, but also getting them to stick together on key issues so that we would be able to make some headway. But I have to say it was very difficult, because we were when I became the minority leader, we had but 23 members, Republican members, in the state assembly, a group of 80 individuals. By the time I my third term in the legislature and decided to run for lieutenant governor, when I stepped down, we had 27 Republicans in the caucus. And it has never been a majority since those days when I left, and that was a long, long time ago.
In 1982, you ran for lieutenant governor of California and lost.
That is correct.
What did that teach you?
Well, first of all, I have always said that for every door that closes, another door will open. I was fortunate enough to have been the Republican nominee, and that gave me a tremendous opportunity to work with people throughout the state and see just how good people are to individuals who are running for office. And I made lifelong friends during that particular time period, and it has taught me that you cannot and should not ever try to please everyone when you are in elective office or running for office. You have to take stands. You have to tell people what your stands are and why you've taken those stands. And I believe that they will respect you for that. And as a result, many times they will vote for you even if they don't agree with all of your positions.
We're talking to the Honorable Carol Hellett, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR, brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with the Honorable Carol Hellett. Carol, a couple weeks ago there was a debate amongst the Democrats, and Barack Obama gets in trouble because he said some good things about this guy, Ronald Reagan. You knew him very well. What did you learn from Ronald Reagan?
Well, I was very fortunate to have worked with President Reagan, to have had the benefit of his counsel as well as his humor. And I learned that to be a leader, you have to not only be conscientious, but you have to be personable, and you have to be willing to tell people where you stand on the issues. President Reagan was so unique because he did have a great ability to look forward and see what was going on. And that is something that so few of our politicians today have. And I use politician as a good term when it applied to Ronald Reagan. He had a great way of bringing people together. Democrats and Republicans alike supported him and believed, particularly in his economic policies, and certainly you would have to say the same thing for his national security policies.
Politics is a career today. Should a young person consider it?
I honestly believe that politics today has become a very nasty and unfortunately a business that, and I mean that, a business that does not have the draw that it once did. And I would say that young people should be encouraged to start out with strong values that they will stick with and then work first before they get into politics. Today, we have too many politicians who've never done anything but run for political office. They don't know what it is to work in a business. They don't know what it is to run a business. And that is, I believe, a huge failure in our system, and it contributes to some of the problems that we have today, not only between the two parties, but within the two parties.
The animosity, the hatred between the two parties, what's the answer? How do we get through this?
Unfortunately, Jack, power is something that becomes almost uncontrollable, in my view, with politicians. And if you take a look at what is going on today, many of the people who are running for office have never run a business. They've never done anything that really distinguished themselves before they ran for office. And as a result, they simply do not understand the importance of dignifying the position and working to get along. When I was in politics, we had huge battles over issues, but then after the battle was over, we were all friends. I don't see that today. The animosity today is really more because of people being power hungry and forgetting that you do have a country that needs to be run and protected and not torn apart by politicians who really don't care as much about the country as they do about themselves and getting reelected.
It's 1966, and you take a five-minute ride in a private plane one day, and then the next day, Carol Hallett, you buy the plane.
That is right, Jack. I will never forget that day. My husband and I drove past a little airport in California, and it had a sign, 30-minute rides, $5. And we both went out, and we took the rides. The next day, we went back, and we bought that airplane and both learned how to fly, and it was truly the beginning of good things that happened to me, because there were so few women who were pilots, and it did help me launch my political career, but it also, throughout my life, has given me opportunities that I would not have had otherwise.
All right, let's jump 20 years ahead. Now it's 1986, and you're named the U.S. Ambassador to the Bahamas. You like these beautiful, you know, the Carmel, the Bahamas. How did you ever become the ambassador to the Bahamas?
Well, again, it goes back to my friendship with Ronald Reagan and also his national security advisor, Bill Clark. Bill Clark had been the assistant or the deputy secretary of state. And he also, besides being the National Security Advisor, had been the Secretary of Interior. He was a neighbor, and a flying neighbor, where we learned to fly. And as a result, I was given several opportunities to work in the administration and did not take any of them because I was busy with my own company. But when the opportunity came along to become the ambassador to the Bahamas, it was one that I could not turn down. And it was a very exciting and a very challenging position and opportunity in my life.
When you're the ambassador to the Bahamas, other than going to parties and laying on the beach, Carol, what do you do all day?
Well, actually, I don't think I ever had the opportunity to lay on the beach, and I'll tell you why. It was at a time that the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration, estimated that between 80 and 85% of all of the cocaine coming into the United States from South America was being transshipped through the Bahamas. So we had a huge operation in the Bahamas to try and stop those drugs from coming into the United States and even coming into the Bahamas. And this was a joint operation with the government of the Bahamas and one that I had management responsibilities for. And so it kept me busy. I had some death threats from some of the big drug traffickers, and it only made me all the more determined that we were going to win.
My money would always be on you, Carol Hallett.
Thank you.
While you were the ambassador, one day you fly an F-18 fighter jet.
That is right. It was one of the highlights of my life because We were responsible in the Bahamas also for a military installation. It's called the Tongue of the Ocean, and all of the Navy ships come there. The U.S. Navy ships do a lot of their testing, particularly for underwater activity. And as a result, I had the opportunity to go out and fly the F-18, and it meant not only taking the underwater survival course, but then flying out over the ocean for 90 minutes, and that was an experience that I will never forget. I had learned to do aerobatics 20 years before, and to do aerobatics in an F-18 and to fly the F-18, it was an unbelievable experience that I will never forget.
You've flown over 5,000 hours from single engine to the F-18 to business jets. You've seen so much looking out those front windows. What's some of the most amazing sights you've ever seen?
There are so many phenomenal sights, not only at nighttime, the lights of cities, that is so inspirational, but to fly over the Andes in a P-3 was an experience that I will never forget. To have the opportunity to fly anywhere and look down on our beautiful country, it's awesome. It is just something that once a pilot, you never want to stop flying, Jack. And I would say that my flying career is what led to my life in politics, and it is also what gave me opportunities to do other things, including flying a plane while being in the Bahamas and having an opportunity to go to make speeches on various islands and flying my own plane. Those are opportunities that very few people have, and I was just among the fortunate because I was a pilot.
We're talking to the Honorable Carol Hallett, and when we come back, we'll ask her about the appointment that George Bush gave her in 1989, where she directed a workforce of 20,000 employees. Quite a lady. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Presented by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to the Honorable Carol Hallett, who was named by George H.W. Bush our U.S. Customs Service Commissioner in 1989, a workforce of 20,000 employees. You weren't spending time on the beach during that job. What did that job entail?
Jack, being the commissioner of the Customs Service was not only a challenge, but a fabulous opportunity to not only work with a workforce of 20,000 very dedicated people, but the Customs Service at that time was really almost two services. On the one side, we dealt with trade and all of the goods coming into this country, about $3 trillion worth, were all processed through the Customs Service. So our commercial side of the house was extremely important, and a huge amount of revenue, billions of dollars, came into the U.S. Treasury from the Customs Service. On the other side of Customs, it's what I call the drugs, guns, and money side of Customs, where all of our agents and our inspectors at the border crossings were all not only looking for contraband, but going after drug traffickers, going after other people who were doing illegal things at our borders. And it was a very important responsibility to bring balance between certainly the drugs, guns, and money side and the commercial side. And there was a lot of rivalry, as you can well imagine, between those two sides of the Customs Service. But I do believe that you have to work together when you have a large workforce, and particularly when you have a responsibility to the government to make your organization, your workforce be productive. And I was thrilled to have that opportunity for about 4 years, and I believe we made some major gains, not only on the trade side, but certainly as it related to, again, coming after and getting drug traffickers. We were very successful, and it is a worldwide business. We had operations going on around the world and set up some very important programs with the Mexican government that are still in effect today.
From 1995 to 2003, you served as the president and CEO of the Air Transport Association, ATA. That's our nation's largest and most prestigious airline trade association. What did you do in that role?
Well, we had all of the major airlines, and that's large and small. Midwest Express and Aloha were two of the smaller carriers at the time. We had all of the major cargo companies that were also members. Of course, you know, the FedEx and UPS names, and Atlas was another one. We were very effective in being able to represent the airlines, not only on Capitol Hill, but around the world. We had a number of very important agreements that we worked on, not only with the International Air Transport Association headquartered in Geneva, but with ICAO, which is the International Civil Aviation Organization, and they set all of the rules and establish all of the international regulations. A good example is the common language that is spoken worldwide is English, and many people don't realize that. You fly into South America and you speak English. If you fly into Germany, you speak English. Now, obviously, a German pilot going into Germany would speak German, but these are the kinds of things that we dealt with in addition to dealing with the issue of customer service and how could we better deal with issues of weather that delayed planes and had an adverse impact on our passengers.
You're meaning to tell me if I give out your cell phone and somebody is waiting for a flight that's delayed, you can help us?
Not anymore. And actually, I couldn't then either. But the one thing we did try to come up with was we actually came up with a 12-point customer service plan that was, in fact, approved by members of the Senate as well as others that were interested.
So you're the president and CEO of this Air Transport Association. It's the morning of 9/11/2001. How did you learn of the tragedy, and what was the rest of your day like that day?
It was probably one of the most unbelievable experiences, because it was, in fact, the airlines that were used as the weapons to kill people. I was on Capitol Hill in a meeting with a group of association heads and two or three senators. And when I reached the meeting, my office called and said that a small plane had crashed into one of the towers, and not to be concerned, but they wanted me to be aware. Well, 5 minutes later, they called back and said, you need to come back to the office immediately because this is a terrorist act. We've just had a call from Bob Baker at American Airlines. He was over operations, telling us that one of the flight attendants on that flight had called to say that they were, in fact, terrorists who had taken over the plane. And this is, of course, before they hit the Trade Center. And I raced back to the office. In the meantime, the second plane had flown into the other tower. And when I got back to the office, I started calling CEOs. But my first call was to the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, urging that they bring every plane to the ground and get all planes out of the sky, because we still did not know about a United flight as well as a Delta flight. As it turned out, the Delta flight was not one that had been taken over by the terrorists. But, of course, we all know that there were two more flights that were yet to crash, and one was the American flight that crashed into the Pentagon. And I was looking out of my window at the office talking to one of the airline CEOs about what we would do when I saw the black smoke go up from the Pentagon, and I knew what had happened. It was only made worse by, of course, the final United flight crashing in Pennsylvania. about that time, about the time that the flight crashed in Pennsylvania, our building was evacuated because we were in an area that was thought to be a target area. And so I mobilized our senior management at ATA and split us up into three groups. We went to three different houses. We walked, one group walked about 2 miles. My group walked a mile and a half. And we set up an office operation. We started working with the FAA immediately. The planes were now all on the ground. And by 6 p.m., we had established that we would come up with a new set of security regulations. And we worked throughout that night. We were able to get back into the building about 8 p.m. And by 4 a.m. the next morning, working back and forth with the FAA, we had come up with a set of safety and security regulations that we believed would enable us to get the airlines flying again. And within about 4 days, as you know, they were flying. And so that night, we had precious little time to think about anything other than how can we prevent something like this from happening again. And that was our goal, to be sure that we would not have any more terrorists overtaking our planes.
Amazing. For decades, Carol, you've quote-unquote ministered to politicians. You've worked with politicians. That takes a special person to do that, to get things done. How have you done it?
I believe that consensus in politics is a very important approach, Jack, and I have always tried to be a consensus builder while at the same time not backing down on principles that I believe are correct. The whole process was much easier then than it is today. I believe there was great respect for politicians when I was in elective office, and I don't believe the politicians in America today have that same respect from the general public. They are fighting too much, and that, as a result, causes people to think, how can they possibly be doing good things for us? And that is very distressing. There is always a way to get something done if you're willing to forget who's going to get credit. And to me, that's the most important thing. Who cares who gets the credit for something as long as it is going to make things better? Or it's, as an example, we have a huge issue right now of a tax relief program that will be voted on by Republicans and Democrats, worked out with both parties and the president to try and give some relief to American workers as a result of the economic downturn right now. That is, you know why that's going to happen? Because everyone is running for office this year, and no one wants to have someone point their finger at them and say, you stopped this from happening, and you stopped the opportunity to get the economy turned around. You stopped that from happening. It will happen simply because of that. So when politicians get pushed, they are able to accomplish something.
We're talking to the Honorable Carol Hallett, and I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm, presents Anything is Possible with Jack Crisula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with the Honorable Carol Hallett. For some negative people, they'd look at your resume and say, she can't hold a job. For others would say, what an amazing woman. Carol, as you read your life, you seemingly have had a fairy tale life. Have you ever had any setbacks?
I don't really look at anything as a setback, Jack. I guess if there had been some kind of a setback, it is obviously when I was not elected as Lieutenant Governor of the state of California, but the very next day I went out and started working to build my own business, and I have always had that for every door that closes, another door will open attitude, and I believe it has not only served me well, but I love life. I love living. I love being able to do things and help other people. I love to be a mentor when I have that opportunity, and life is good, and you really need to be able to give back some of the things that have come your way.
Life is a series of chapters. You know, you say when one door closes, another opens. You relish opening new doors. Okay? For many of us, we don't want to ever have to open a new door. We want to hold on to the old door. We don't want to take risks. How do we learn to do that, Carol Ellen?
Jack, taking risks is part of life, and the people who really are able to accomplish great things are risk takers. And it is something that I would encourage everyone to really give serious thought to, because you cannot expect to really succeed unless you're willing to work very hard and try new things. I grew up going to a one-room school. I had obstacles placed in front of me. I've never looked at them as obstacles. I've looked at them as opportunities to try and meet every challenge. And I am convinced that hard work gets us 99% of the way, and the rest of it is enthusiasm and luck and fate.
We met about a month ago over lunch at Janopoulos Restaurant. You got up that morning at 2:30 in the morning to fly to Detroit from Washington, D.C. You were meeting with other people, and then that night you were flying back to New York City. You had a blue outfit on, Carol Hellett, with a red coat. I think it was a St. John's outfit. Looked fabulous. Well, you know, you've got all the money in the world. You've got a great life. Why continue to work so hard?
I'll tell you, I love working. I love doing things and being productive. Now, at the same time, my husband, he and I are both in our 70s, and he is working even harder than I am because we have a 350-acre farm, and he is day in and day out making that farm operate. We have horses and cattle and chickens, and it is a big operation for him, and you would think that I would be there all of the time working as the farmer's wife, but I do that 4 days a week, and I do what I'm doing for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce 3 days a week, and sometimes it stretches a little bit farther than that, but I like to think I lead two lives, both of which I love.
You know, you, Green Acres, remember that show Green Acres with Zsa Zsa?
Huh? That is so fitting. I have so many different scenes that fit right into Green Acres.
The good parts of Zsa Zsa, right?
Oh, indeed.
Eddie Albert was the guy on Zsa Zsa, right?
So yes, actually, I think that was Ava, wasn't it? Ava Gabor?
I don't remember.
Yes, it was Ava Gabor, and I had the great privilege of getting to know her when I was in the Bahamas, and she was a wonderful lady. Very different from her sister, Zsa Zsa.
Okay. There's a saying, what you look like at 20 is God's gift to you. What you look like at 60 or 70 is your gift to God. Your enthusiasm, your energy, your zest, it's a real gift back to God. How have you done that?
Well, part of it is loving God. Part of it is having real beliefs and knowing that you're getting guidance, you're getting support. There are obstacles that you have to work out yourself, but having God by your side is something that has I grew up with. My father was a great believer because his father, my grandfather, was an Episcopal minister, and I have been very fortunate to have God in my life.
For nearly the last 4 years, you've been the counsel to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which represents nearly 3 million companies in America. What do you do in that job?
Well, and I'm proud to say, Jack, that you are one of our members, and we are very, very pleased that Trust in Us has become a member of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, because we are working to help the economy remain strong and to help businesses succeed. And my responsibilities are more or less being a jack of all trades and master of none. I help with our transportation program. I help with our intellectual property program. And wherever I'm needed, I'm always willing to go out and do whatever I can to be helpful on behalf of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. It is an outstanding organization that has truly made a difference in the success of business, not only in America, but around the world.
Carol Hallett, do you bake too?
My husband likes to say that I haven't cooked a good meal for 20 years, but actually it's only been about a year. I can cook when I need to. I love to cook. I love to garden. My favorite hobby is gardening, both flowers and vegetables, and there's just not enough time to get it all done. I wish we had 36 hours a day rather than 24.
Who do you most admire and who are your heroes?
Well, I have many heroes. I really admire my husband. He is a great achiever. I really admired my father. I truly admired Ronald Reagan for what he stood for. And there are many others, but those are three people. They really stand out for me. My husband has been an unbelievable supporter of every one of my endeavors. And he is, we are real partners, and we are going to celebrate our, we will celebrate our 50th wedding anniversary on the 26th of January.
And what are you going to do that day?
Well,
go buy a 737 or something.
Work on the farm, but we do have a nice dinner party planned for our 50th anniversary with a lot of old friends getting together. And that's that actually is something that I can't possibly believe that it has been 50 years. 50 years doesn't seem like much time. It seems like only yesterday that we were married, and I think that's a big plus. You know, my husband laughingly says every once in a while, we've been happily married for 48 years, and 48 out of 50 isn't bad. And I think everyone can relate to that. You know, you have a little up and down here and there, but my goodness sakes, we are surely great partners, and I love my husband a lot.
What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
My advice to all of our young listeners would be to grow up with ideals and goals that you know are going to be tough to reach, but they are achievable. You must build into your life the ability to listen to others. And certainly, I don't know anyone who doesn't want to have discipline. We must discipline ourselves as we grow up. We must take discipline as an opportunity and not something that we try to shy away from. I would urge every young person today to reach for the stars. There is nothing you can't do if you set your mind to it. Just make sure it's always honest.
What a glorious life, Carol Hallett. Please keep it up.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Jack.
Our guest next Sunday will be another fascinating lady, a professional vocalist, author, personal trainer, and her husband have two biological sons, and they adopted 9 more from Russia. And they have Carol, no nanny, Lori Adams.
How fabulous.
Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.